Om sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Katakshakiranachanta naman mohabdaye namaha ananta nanda krishnaya jagan mangalamurtaye. Very good. Welcome back. This is working fine. Yes. We continue our study of Advaita Makaranda in our Vedanta class. And we come now to a series of verses, starting with verse 11, which are all directed towards disproving any notion we might have that consciousness changes. Consciousness, as we've defined very carefully, consciousness is that by which you know what's happening right now. What's happening right now is conveyed to you in your mind. Whatever is happening in your mind is revealed by consciousness. Here's the point. If your consciousness is subject to change of any kind, then it must be subject to various kinds of suffering. In other words, consciousness can shift from a state of perfect contentment to a state of perfect misery and back and forth. So it's crucial to disprove any possibility that consciousness undergoes change. I think we'll see three verses today. Each of them disproves different kinds of change. In fact, the first verse, we'll see in just a moment, disproves the most obvious kinds of change. The most obvious change is that our consciousness undergoes three states: the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state. Let me give you the Sanskrit terminology, since we'll be using it consistently. So the waking state is called Jagrat Avastha. As the waking state. You might be familiar with this nomenclature, but we're going to use it extensively. Swapna Avastha is the dream state, and Sushupti Avastha is a state of dreamless sleep, deep sleep. Jagrat, Swapna, and Sushupti, these are the three states. And as we're going to see in these verses, they're not states of consciousness. This is one of the biggest confusions in Vedanta, that these are three states of consciousness. They're not three states of consciousness. If they were, then consciousness would be undergoing change, which we're going to disprove in a moment. These are three states of your mind. We'll see all this in just a moment. Very good. Let's see the first of our verses. Supta suptim na janati, supta suptim na janati, na supte swapna jagarau, na supte swapna jagarau, jagrat swapna sushupti nam, jagrat swapna sushupti nam, sakshyato hamathadrashaha. Sakshyato hamathadrashaha. So, here's the general point. If your consciousness is able to undergo change at all, and the most obvious kind of change, as I said before, is changing from waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. If your consciousness is subject to change, you are inevitably subject to suffering. So we want to dismiss any possibility of change. And here the question is, there are three states. But are these three states of consciousness, or are they three states of mind that are related to by the ahankara? Ahankara, ego. We introduced that concept before, the I thought, the sense of individuality. So he begins with this very important observation. Suptaha suptim na janati. Suptaha, the sleeper. Suptim na janati. Na janati, the sleeper. Na janati, does not know. Suptim, sleep. And before we can get into this, we've discussed a number of times the fact that consciousness remains in deep sleep. But since it's crucial to this discussion, let's reflect very briefly on what we've already discussed, and that is, in deep sleep, dreamless sleep, you are as conscious as you are right now. Right now, your consciousness reveals what's happening in your mind while you're awake. While you're dreaming, your consciousness reveals what's happening in your mind while you're dreaming. And in deep sleep, your mind becomes very quiet, becomes perfectly still, and your consciousness reveals the stillness of your mind in deep sleep. Point is, you remain completely conscious in deep sleep. You are conscious, but there's nothing to be conscious of. The example I've given many times is if you're standing in a perfectly dark room, you see. You still have the power of sight in that dark room. You haven't gone blind. You see, but there's nothing to be seen. So just as in a dark room, you have the power of sight. You see, but there's nothing to be seen. In the same way, in deep sleep, you remain conscious, but there's nothing to be conscious of because your mind has become completely silent. Now, right now, you're aware that you are awake. The one who is awake, that sense of being aware that you are awake right now, let's call that one the waker. We're referring to your ego, your sense of identity. Right now, you feel like you're an awake person. I haven't put you to sleep yet. Tonight, you will be dreaming, and it's very interesting. While you're dreaming, you are aware of your dream experiences. You are there is an ego in the dream. Right now, there's an ego present in a waking state. You are aware of whatever's happening right now. You are the waker, aware of what's happening right now in a waking state. While you're dreaming, you are the dreamer, aware of what's happening in the dream state. And what's fascinating is that the dreamer, the dream ego, is not the same as a waking ego. Have you ever kind of like dreamt you were a different kind of person in a dream? Maybe or maybe not. A good example is there are many examples of people who have lost a limb. Like in war, if a soldier loses a limb, years later, when they dream of walking and running. So in the dream, their dream ego is having two working legs. The point I'm making is that the waking ego and dream ego are different. Your ego, your sense of individuality, is different in a waking state and in a dream state. Then what about in deep sleep? Right now, your waking ego knows what's happening right now. In a dream, your dream ego knows what you're dreaming about. And in deep sleep, do you have the sense in deep sleep, whoa, I'm really deeply asleep? how quiet it is. You don't have those kinds of thoughts or feelings whatsoever because your ego is gone in a deep sleep state. We said in a prior class, ego is a mental event, a mental activity. It's an organizing principle of our minds. And that organizing principle is present when we're awake, when we're dreaming. But at certain times, that organizing principle called ego, ahankara, goes away. For example, in deep meditation, samadhi, it goes away. Certainly in deep sleep, it goes away. And that's what he says in the first line, suptaha, the dream ego, suptim na janati, doesn't know sleep because it's absent. The sleep ego is absent in deep sleep, and on the other hand, na asupte swapna jagrao, asupte, this is a tricky language, asupte, when you're not asleep, na swapna jagrao, na asupte, can also refer to consciousness. Now, that which doesn't sleep is consciousness. So asupte, in or with regard to consciousness, na swapna jagrao, there is no swapna, dream. There is no jagra, waking state. Jagra means jagrat. So what he's saying here is that the ego is absent in the deep sleep state. The ego is present in different ways in the waking and dream states. So then who is the one that's really undergoing change here? The one that undergoes change is obviously that ego, ahankara. You have a waking ego right now. It changes in a dream state somewhat. And then in deep sleep, it goes away entirely. The one that's undergoing these three states is not consciousness. And he'll make that point in the second half of the verse. It's another argument in the second half. In the first half of this verse, the argument is the one who undergoes change is obviously ego, ahankara. There's a waking ego, your sense of what's happening right now. There's a dream ego. You may find yourself to be a different kind of person in your dreams, knowing what's happening in your dream. And then in deep sleep, that ego is gone. Clearly, the ego, ahankara, undergoes change in these three states of, three states that belong to the mind. Ahankara abides in the mind. Ahankara undergoes change in these three states. In fact, we'll come to that point in the next verse. Let's see the second half here. Jagrat swapna sushupti nam, of these three states, jagrat, waking state, swapna, dream state, sushupti, deep sleep state, for these three states, sakshi ataha aham, you have to break the words apart, sakshi aham, aham, I am the sakshi, the awareful witness, of what? Jagrat, swapna, and sushupti, the three states of experience. I am the observer of these three states of experience. Further, I'm the consciousness is the observer of the ego's presence and absence. Let me make this point. Right now, you have the waking ego present in your experience. How do you know that? You're conscious of being the waking, you're conscious of the presence of being a waker. You're conscious of being the waking individual. that waking ego, ahankara. In a dream, you're conscious of being the person in your dream, the dream ego. And then in deep sleep, when you wake up, you recall that that ego was absent in deep sleep, which means when you wake up, you know that you were not. When you wake up, let's be very clear about this. When you wake up, you're very clear about the fact that during deep sleep, you knew nothing. You knew nothing because that ego, the sleep ego was gone. Again, if the sleep ego was present, you'd have the experience, oh, I'm deeply asleep. You don't have that experience. When you wake up, you have no memory of the presence of that sleep ego, and from this you know the absence of the sleep ego during deep sleep. Here's the point. You are conscious of the waking ego. You're conscious of the dream ego while you're dreaming, and you're conscious of the absence of the sleep ego. Sakshi aham, aham, I am the sakshi, the awareful witness who knows the transformation the ego undergoes. Ego undergoes a change from waking ego to dream ego to no ego in deep sleep. The ego undergoes these changes, and your consciousness is the unchanging light of awareness that reveals all of this stuff going on in your mind. The waking state comes and goes in your mind. It's revealed by unchanging consciousness. Dream state comes and goes in your mind. It's revealed by unchanging consciousness. And deep sleep comes and goes in your mind, revealed by unchanging consciousness. Clearly, there are three states of mind, not three states of consciousness. Just to wrap up that thought, so often it's incorrectly said there are these three states of consciousness, and that leads to the question, well, what about the fourth? What is the fourth state of consciousness? Well, wait a minute. If the three aren't states of consciousness, then the so-called fourth is not a state of consciousness either. That term, the fourth, comes in the Mandukya Upanishad. Many of you have studied it. We've taught it here before. In the Mandukya Upanishad, consciousness is indeed called the fourth. It's not called a fourth state. It's called the fourth with regard to the waking dream and sleep conditions or states, but consciousness, the waking dream and sleep states are states of the mind. Consciousness is a fourth independent of these three. Consciousness is not a state of mind. Consciousness is not a fourth state or condition. There are, simply put, what our topic, as I introduced, is to show that consciousness is unchanging. If consciousness is unchanging, how can you talk of three states or four states? It's meaningless. Sadly, Vedanta is often incorrectly taught as consciousness undergoing its various states. Anyway, we won't make that confusion. Three states of mind revealed by one unchanging consciousness. This topic continues. Vijnana-virate-suptis, tad-janma-swapna-jagarau, tad-janma-swapna-jagarau, tat-sakshi-nah-katam-me-syur, tat-sakshi-nah-katam-me-syur, nitya-jnana-syate-trayaha, nitya-jnana-syate-trayaha. So he gives a very simple definition of the three states. He says, suptihi. Supti means sushupti. It's a short form. Supti means sushupti, deep sleep. Sushupti is what? Vijnana viratihi. Viratihi is a cessation. The cessation of vijnana. Here, vijnana means mental activities, vrittis. You may know that term, vritti, for mental activities, which means all thoughts, emotions, sensations, any kind of mental activity is called a vritti. Here, they're called vijnana. So, vijnana viratihi, the absence of mental activities, is our definition of supti, sushupti, deep sleep. On the other hand, tad janma, the janma, the birth, tat, of that, of them, of what? That vijnana, those vrittis, those mental activities. Tad janma, the birth of mental activities, thoughts, emotions, sensations, that the birth of those mental activities is swapna jagara, is swapna, the dream state, and jagara, the waking state. Now look at this. How obvious it is, our author makes it so clear that we define these three states in terms of the presence and absence of thoughts. Presence and absence of thoughts is a quality of the mind. The presence and absence of thoughts belong to the mind, not the consciousness, making the point we just discussed. These three states belong to the mind, not to consciousness. There are three states of mind. There are no states of consciousness. Okay, enough said. Then he concludes. Tat sakshinaha katam me syuhu nitya jnanasya te trayaha. He says, kat, and I'm going to take these words out of order. Katam, how? How, in the last line, te trayaha, how can these three, te, those, trayaha, three, how can those three, the three states of mind, jagrat, swapna, sushupti, how can they, may, syuhu, how could they belong to me, may, syuhu, how could it be? How could they belong to may, me, the one who is tat sakshinaha, me who is the observer of them, tat means of them, sakshi, witness, a awareful witness, how could these three states possibly belong to me? Me referring to the consciousness, which is my essence, the consciousness which is tat sakshinaha, the observer of the three, and nitya jnanasya, and which is eternal consciousness. And there are two points he's making here. One is anything you observe is separate from you. There's a difference between observer and observed. Right now you're looking at me on a screen. So as the observer, you are different from what appears on the screen. Anything observed by you is different from you and doesn't belong to you. Tell me, do you observe the waking state right now? Yes. Do you observe the dream state when you're dreaming? Yes. Do you observe the absence of mental activities during deep sleep? Yes. These three states are observed by you. You are the sakshi, the awareful witness, and whatever is observed by you, the sakshi, is different from you, the sakshi. So, tat sakshinaha, for you, the awareful witness, whatever is observed, including the three states of mind, is different from you. The second point he's making here is that your consciousness is here called nitya jnana, in many ways of interpreting that, we've said several times, unchanging consciousness. Nitya literally means eternal. But eternal, When I use that word eternal, I think of my guru's joke, Pujya Swami Dayananda, loved to point out that eternal is not like styrofoam. What he meant by that is when you use styrofoam and it goes into the landfill, it stays in the landfill for hundreds of years, but it's not eternal. It eventually decays. The problem, he points out, is that eternal to us often means a long period of time. But the word nitya does not mean a long period of time. Eternal, in our Vedantic understanding, is not a long period of time. Eternal means timeless, that which doesn't exist in time, that which isn't affected by time, that which doesn't undergo change. Consciousness doesn't exist in time. Consciousness doesn't undergo change. That's what this term means, nitya jnana. And just that's a little bit of a philosophical perspective. We can say, just to finish that line of thought, if I say this piece of paper is 11 inches long, that 11 inches, how does that change over time? How long does this 11 inches last? You'll say, wait a minute, that's a measure of distance. Measure of distance isn't affected by time. That's what we mean by timeless. The measure of distance is timeless. It's not affected by time. In the same way, consciousness is nitya, not a long time eternal, but timeless, not affected by time. That's the philosophical perspective. Just to conclude this verse, let's give a very experiential perspective. In fact, we did part of this before. The consciousness that reveals your mind's activities right now, how is this consciousness different from the consciousness that revealed your mind's activities yesterday? Say no change. Same consciousness yesterday, same consciousness today. How about the consciousness 1 year ago? Same. 10 years ago? Same. When you were an infant, the consciousness that revealed the activities of your mind and the consciousness that reveals the activities of your mind right now, one and the same, unchanging consciousness. Obviously, our minds and bodies have undergone tremendous change from the time of infancy to today, and will continue to undergo change, our bodies and minds, until we die. That consciousness undergoes no change whatsoever. The same consciousness by which you knew what was happening as an infant is the same consciousness by which you know what's happening right now. Same consciousness by which you'll, tonight when you dream. The consciousness that will reveal your dream activities, is that a different consciousness? It's the same consciousness. And in deep sleep, the consciousness that reveals the silence of your mind in deep sleep, it's the same consciousness. There is a continuity of consciousness, a continuity of consciousness from infancy to today, the same consciousness, continuity. In the same way, there's continuity from the waking state, dream state, deep sleep state, these three states of mind. There's perfect continuity of consciousness. That's what this term nitya jnana means. Eternal consciousness. Eternal is not a long period of time. It is timeless and unchanging. Okay.
Thanks.
So these two verses that we've just seen describe how your consciousness is not subject to change as your mind undergoes these three states: waking state, dream state, and deep sleep. But there are many other kinds of change that are possible. For example, right now in a waking state, your mind is subject to all kinds of change. In the waking state itself, there are all kinds of changes that take place. Thoughts come and go. Thoughts undergo transformation. Thoughts disappear. So even within the waking state, there are all kinds of changes. Let's see this verse, and we're going to discuss six different kinds of change that are possible, none of which affect consciousness. And that's in the next verse, 13. Shadvikaravatam veta, shadvikaravatam veta, nirvikaro hamanyata, nirvikaro hamanyata, tadvikaranusandhanam, tadvikaranusandhanam, sarvatanavakalpate, sarvatanavakalpate. Shadvikara. This is a term frequently used, not just in Vedanta, but in other schools of thought as well. Shad, six, vikara, six kinds of change. Let me put them on the board. Six kinds of change. Shadvikara. Vikara literally means transformation. If you can think about an object undergoing six different kinds of transformation, the first of the six is an object is born. It comes into existence. So a transition from non-existence to existence is the first of these six kinds of change, shadvikara. The second, asti, exists. The continuity of an object's existence is a state. So coming into existence is one kind of change, remaining in the same form. I know it sounds a little bit contradictory, but this is in classical Indian logic, this condition of continued existence is considered the second of the shadvikara, the six kinds of changes. Jayati, asti, then vardhate, grows, just as an infant's body will grow in, that's not just an infant's body, my stomach seems to grow, so that happens to many of us. So vardhate, growth, is the third kind of change. Fourth, these Sanskrit terms are not terribly important, but it's worth seeing them. They're frequently used. Viparinamate literally means to be transformed. So transforms is the fourth of the transformations, to undergo, as objects undergo change. As we all, hair grows gray. That's a good example of a change. Hair goes gray. The other thing that happens for many men is the hair falls out. So it declines, and that's the fifth, apakshiyate, decays. Apakshiyate, decays, like hair falling out. And the sixth and last of the Shadvikara is nashyati, and that is gets destroyed. To some extent, these are arbitrary, but they're convenient and they're also consistently used. Whenever we talk about states that an object can go through, transformations an object can go through, we always use, always means in Vedantic terminology, we always use these six Sanskrit words and these six concepts to indicate the Shadvikara, six kinds of change. So now the question is, do these six kinds of change affect Atma? In fact, just to see that very, very briefly, does Atma get born? I don't think so. Does Atma grow? It's already all pervasive. How can it grow? Can Atma undergo transformation? That's what this whole topic is about. Can Atma decay? That doesn't make any sense. Nashati, can Atma be destroyed? You can see where we're going with this discussion. So he's now going to give some logic that shows why none of these six kinds of change or transformation can possibly affect Atma. So here's his argument. He says in a second line, nirvikaraha aham. Aham, I, referring to the true I, consciousness. Aham, not in this case, aham, we're not referring to the body. We're not referring to the body, mind, sense complex, the individual, nor are we referring to the ahankara. Here, aham means the true I consciousness, Satchitananda Atma. And it says, aham, I, my true nature, consciousness, is nirvikara. Notice the contrast between the word above, shadvikara, six kinds of change, and nirvikara, the absence of change. So he is saying, aham nirvikara, I, my consciousness is nirvikara, unchanging. And it is the unchanging why or how, first line, being the veta. Veta means knower. So my unchanging consciousness is the veta, the knower, shadvikaravatam. Oh, that's interesting. Shadvikaravat is that which possesses six kinds of modifications. My translation here could be improved. What is it that possesses six kinds of modification? Consciousness undergoes no change at all. Our thoughts certainly do. Our emotions do. Our sensations do. Everything in our experience is subject to change. That's pretty obvious. All that we experience is constantly changing. In a waking state, in a dream state, of course, deep sleep is something else. So throughout the waking and dream states, everything you experience is constantly undergoing these six kinds of change. All of your waking and dream experiences constantly undergo these six kinds of change. Thoughts, jayate, thoughts are born. Asti, emotions exist for a period of time. Vardhate, anxiety can grow. Viparinamate. One thought can lead to another thought. Apakshiyate. Sadness fades away. Nashyati. All mental activities go away in deep sleep. So all mental activities and all you experience are subject to these six kinds of change, this shadvikara. So it is your mind and thoughts and emotions and sensations, all that you experience is shadvikaravan, that which possesses the six kinds of change. And your consciousness is the veta, the knower, observer of these six kinds of transformations that are constantly taking place in your mind. Constantly means whenever you're awake or when you're dreaming. Deep sleep is a special case. In deep, just to make sure we understand, in deep sleep, what changes? There's no change in deep sleep, except for the fact that the state of deep sleep itself is subject to change. It comes and it goes. But within the state of deep sleep, nothing changes. So that's why it's the special case. So here he says that aham, I, consciousness, is the nirvikara veta, the unchanging knower. Shadvikara vatam, of all six changes that take place in your mind. Just as the three states of waking, dream, and sleep belong to your mind, in the same way, these six modifications, shadvikara, belong to your mind. And you are the nirvikara veta. Your consciousness is the unchanging knower, the unchanging observer, the unchanging awareful witness of these six modifications of your mind. Then he gives how could it be otherwise? He says, anyata, end of the second line. Anyata, otherwise means if your consciousness was not the unchanging observer, anyata, if it were otherwise, then tadvikara anusandhanam, the recognition. Says observation here, I would say recognition would be a better translation. Anusandhanam, the recognition, tadvikara, of those six kinds of changes, sarvata, in all manners, na avakalpate, it would not be possible. Na sarvata avakalpate, it would not be possible in any way whatsoever to observe the changing conditions of your mind, anyata, if your consciousness was not an unchanging observer. This needs to be explained. Suppose your consciousness changed simultaneously as your mind changed. This is a good, we call it purva paksha, the opposing point of view. Let me make it very specific. Suppose as sadness arose in your mind, suppose your consciousness simultaneously became sad. In terms of our experience, it often feels that way. We know sadness is a mental phenomenon. You can observe sadness arising in your mind, but to an undiscerning person, the sadness that's present in the mind seems to affect consciousness. So you might assume that as sadness arises in your mind, that your consciousness simultaneously undergoes change and becomes sad. As the transformation of sadness takes place in your mind, there's a simultaneous transformation of your consciousness as your consciousness becomes sad. If that were the case, would you be able to observe sadness as it arose in your mind? If the observer simultaneously becomes sad, how can you observe the arising of sadness? This is a little abstract, so let me make it more concrete. An example I've used too many times is if you're driving to work in the morning and you're on the highway, you're going 60 miles an hour, and you look at the car in the next lane, and in that car is another guy driving to work, and he's drinking a cup of coffee on his way to work. Now, the fact is, the fellow in the car in the next lane, is he's drinking coffee at 60 miles an hour. That's the fact of the matter. Do you perceive him drinking coffee at 60 miles an hour? No. He looks perfectly stationary to you. In order to observe him drinking coffee at 60 miles an hour, you have to be a stationary observer standing still on the side of the road. That's how it works. Only a stationary observer can observe that driver drinking coffee at 60 miles an hour. If you are simultaneously going 60 miles an hour, he looks stationary. Now, do you see how that applies to my earlier example? If your consciousness simultaneously becomes sad, as sadness enters your mind, you won't even know that sadness is entering your mind. It won't seem like anything is happening at all. Of course, that's not what we feel. We feel sadness entering our minds. And we do so because, in essence, you are an unchanging conscious observer observing that sadness arising in the mind. This really has to be understood. He used that word anyata. And in there's a term in logic, anyata anupapattihi, the impossibility of it being in any other manner. It's the kind of logic he's using here. If your consciousness undergoes change, it is utterly impossible. That's what he says in the last line. Sarvata na avakalpate. It is absolutely impossible to observe tadvikara anusandhanam. It's absolutely impossible to observe the changing conditions of your mind if your consciousness moves simultaneously with your mind. Let me give you a. This happened to me in India long ago. I was in a train at a train station, and I looked. There was a train on the next track, and the train looked stationary. I was looking across. You could see people inside the other train. And it felt like that my train was stationary and their train was also stationary. That's what it looked like until my train, suddenly came to a stop. And that train started moving. And at first I was wondering, what in the world was going on? How can my train stop and the other train start moving? Of course, what was happening is both trains were actually moving very, very slowly. If you've been on a train like that, you know when they move very slowly, you can't even tell that they're moving. It's a very big, heavy train, and you don't feel a sense of motion at all. What was happening is both trains were moving at the same speed, very, very slowly. My train suddenly came to a stop, and the other train then looked like it started. Of course, both trains were rolling all the time. This experience was very unsettling to me. It was very unsettling because you form a conclusion about your immediate reality. And my immediate reality was both trains were still. And then suddenly, my train jerked to a stop. That train started moving, and my concept of reality was completely disproved. It was a jarring recognition, but it was a recognition of a truth. Now, I'm leading up to something here. It's a jarring recognition, a startling recognition, when you recognize that the way you've been seeing reality is wrong. Another example of this, I'll come to my point in just a moment, please be patient. Another example of this is many years ago when I was living in California, and there was a pretty significant earthquake. And I looked outside and I could see waves traveling through the surface of the earth. You could actually see like a road buckling, going up and down, undulating is the nice word. Now, that was very jarring to me because we consider that the ground is solid. Ground doesn't move. Ground certainly doesn't undulate in waves. That experience was jarring because it conveyed to me the fact that my concept about the earth being perfectly solid, perfectly still, was a wrong concept. When you have a firmly held wrong concept and it's disproven, that can be really jarring. Of course, reality, knowing what is real is good. We should know earthquakes are real, so we better get ready for that reality. Now, here's what I'm coming leading up to. It's ordinary for us to assume that consciousness is affected by whatever happens in our minds. We use this metaphor all the time that consciousness seems to be in terms of experience, consciousness seems to be affected by whatever happens in our minds, just like this crystal seems to be affected by the orangeness of the cloth. Now, this is our typical problem that we have to deal with in Vedanta. I don't need the crystal example, actually, to make this point. Here's the point. From childhood onwards, most people have had the firm conclusion that whatever happens in the mind affects you in a fundamental way. Sadness in your mind affects you in a fundamental way. That means affects consciousness. So, and in terms of experience, it seems so. Just as this crystal, in terms of experience, seems orange, in the same way, in terms of experience, your consciousness seems to be affected by whatever happens in your mind, like sadness. Now here's the point. You've spent, let me not say you, suppose a person has spent his or her entire life assuming that whatever happens in the mind affects consciousness, affects you in a very fundamental way. And then when you come to this particular teaching, and you recognize that your consciousness is utterly unchanging, hasn't been affected by any experience you've had in your entire life. To recognize that unchanging, utterly unchanging nature of consciousness, when you really get it, it's kind of jarring. It's startling Just like I was startled when our train came to a stop and the other train started moving, just like I was startled when I looked outside and I saw the ground undulating with waves, in the same way it is startling when you get it. Consciousness doesn't change. Who you are as a conscious being is an unchanging reality. Of course, everything around you changes. Everything in your experience constantly changes, but not consciousness. And that consciousness is your true nature. This recognition is crucial in Vedanta because it gives the inner freedom that you feel when you know nothing can affect you, nothing can hurt you, nothing can injure you, nothing can rob you of contentment and peace and joy, because that contentment, peace, and joy are inherent in the conscious being that you are, in that unchanging conscious being. In the expression Sat Chit Ananda, we'll end with this. So in that expression, Sat-Chit-Ananda, Chit, of course, is consciousness. Ananda refers to that inner source of contentment, peace, and joy. And the word Sat is just so casually translated as existence. But on examination, that word Sat reveals the fact that Chit, consciousness, is unchanging. That which is real, that which is absolutely existent, is that which is unchanging. So the word Sat tells you, in that expression, Sat-Chit-Ananda, the word Sat tells you that your consciousness, Chit, is Sat, unchanging. And when you get that your consciousness is unchanging, then when your mind goes through its ups and downs, as it does, my mind has its ups and downs. Every mind has its ups and downs, as we say. So what? Let the mind go up and down, sideways, wherever it wants to go. How does it affect you in your true nature? How does it affect consciousness? Not at all. That recognition brings tremendous inner freedom. Okay, we'll conclude here. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Tat Sat.